Rishut, the Rabbanim, your esteemed rabbis. To be honest with you, I'm not a rabbi. Unfortunately, they give me the title, but I don't have smicha, just a regular balei bayit. But I was hoping in the closing minutes here of Tisha B'Av to share some thoughts about Tisha B'Av. I think the title was Positive Takeaways from Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is an extremely difficult day. It's a day that really, in many senses, is a vacuum. It's a day that has absence of almost everything. And so therefore, it's very hard in many ways to take anything away from Tisha B'Av, because so much of Tisha B'Av is built around what it's not, or what we don't do, or what is absent on that day. And so to take away something from it always is hard, and I think many people leave Tisha B'Av feeling extremely empty. And it's not a bad feeling, that is supposed to be the feeling of Tisha B'Av. But if we want to rectify the situation, we don't want to have a Tisha B'Av happen again, then we have to find a way to figure out what the problem is, the core issue is. And after we define the core issue, then we can take the steps to rectify it or take a more positive approach so that we don't revisit this feeling of Tisha B'Av and we don't revisit Tisha B'Av again. So the Gemara in Yoma famously says that the Korban HaBayit is associated with Sinat Chinam. Now, Sinat Chinam is translated or loosely translated as baseless hatred. The problem is, if that is the core issue of Tisha B'Av, what caused the Korban HaBayit, it's a terminology that's very amorphous, abstract. Really, in many senses, it's an oxymoron. There really is no such thing as baseless hatred. No matter how irrational hatred is, there's always a reason for it. It might be irrational, but there's a reason. And so I think the translation itself even belies the problem of what is the sinat chinam. So what I would like to do over the next short minutes here is try to give some definition to sinat chinam, in order then to say what it is that we're trying to stop, or something that we're trying to rectify here and get to avat chinam. And that's really the purpose of Tisha B'Av, is to bring us to that point that we are understanding what went wrong so that we can rectify it going forward. And so I'm going to try in the remaining time to give definition to that sinat chinam. I'm going to give three different approaches, three different ideas with regards to sinat chinam, not mutually exclusive. I think they are all true. Each one of them, by the way, probably deserves a full shiur by itself, maybe even multiple shiurim. But I know the only thing I was told about this time slot is I have to be finished by 8:48. So that was the only thing I told. And the Navi tells us in Malachim Bet, it's the Haftorah from Mitzora, tells us the story about what happened to the individual who stood between the hungry people and the food. He's no longer with us. I know where we stand here, so we're going to try our best to get there without that problem. So the first thing I want to speak to is a pasuk that's found in Parshat Mishpatim. It says, "Ki yitireh chamor sonacha, ruveitz tachat maso, v'chadalta mazov lo, azov tazov imo." The pasuk, there's a paired pasuk, a sister pasuk found in Dvarim as well, in Parshat Kitetze, that tell us on obligations with regards to helping out a fellow Jew when they have a problem with their animal, when it's under the toil, the burden of its load. What do you have to do to help out? The pasuk formulates it in an interesting way, which is, ki tireh chamor sonacha, when you see the chamor of the one you hate. So the problem is, what does that mean? Who is this person that you hate? Not only is that interesting, even more interesting is the Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara discussing this in Bava Metzia says that when it comes to a choice between ohev lifrok, you have someone who's your friend, someone that you love, who you have the opportunity to help to unload, v'soneh liton. And you have someone you dislike, someone you hate, that you can help to load up. Mitzvah b'soneh. There's a greater mitzvah of the one you hate. Kedei l'kofet yitzro. In order to subdue your inclinations, in some way to subvert those feelings of hatred and force you to do it for the person you hate first. The Gemara leaves it there. It's a very difficult Gemara because, as the Gemara in Pesachim, which takes this up, says, isn't there an explicit pasuk in the Torah that tells us in Parshat Kiddushim, which is, lo tisna et achicha bilvavecha. One is not allowed to hate their fellow Jew. So how is it possible here that we have someone who you hate that you need to take care of when you're not even allowed to hate them in the first place? Lo tisna et achicha bilvavecha, hochiach tochiach et amitecha, lo tisna lav chait. Gemara sees a problem here. How could it be that you have sinah for this individual? Just to be honest with you, many of the Rishonim believe that lo tisna et achicha bilvavecha is not a mitzvah, but rather a statement. Don't harbor ill will towards other people. Rather, tell them what the problem is. I'm sure you all know people who are Mahajrim and Mahajrim in these areas, and let you know exactly how they feel. And look, it's not Achicha Bilvecha, but rather, Hukhiach Tukhiach et Amitecha. Nevertheless, the Gemara in Pesachim sees a stira here and says, how could it be that there's a person now who's told to take care of the Chamor Sonacha? On the other hand, it's Lotis Nat Achicha Bilvavecha. So the Gemara in Pesachim concludes that it has to be someone that did something wrong. It gives the context. It tells you the reasons why. It's not really what I want to focus on. I want to focus on the Balei HaTosafot over there. It says that you have a right to hate someone because basically the pasuk says, Lotis Nat Achicha Bilvavecha. When he acts appropriately, when he does what is right, then you have a restriction against the hatred. But in a case where that's not right, or that's not true, the individual does not conduct themselves properly, then there is no restriction of lotis nata chichol bevavecha, or in essence, there's permission to hate the individual. And that's how the Gemara in Pesachim, unlike the Gemara in Bava Metzia, that's how the Gemara in Pesachim deals with it. Tosfot over there says something amazing. Tosfot says, Bahashta makfiat yetzer shayach. The Gemara Bava Metzia says the reason to take care of the person you hate first is so that you subdue your feelings towards them. Meantime, the Gemara Pesachim is telling us they're justified. You're allowed to hate the person. There are proper feelings. Otherwise, you'd be in violation. So how can the Gemara tell you give precedence to the person you hate when the hate is justified? Cave under mitzvah l'sanoto. There's a mitzvah to hate this individual. V'yesh lomar. And this answer of Tosfot, I think, is very telling and gives us a large insight. Kevan shusono gam chavero soneoto. When you hate someone, they're going to hate you back. And then he writes, kamayim apanim lepanim ken leva adam la'adam, quotes the pasuk from Mishlei. Again, there's a lot to say about this. Bay mitochach l'dei sin'a gemura v'shayach fiat ha'yetzer. Tosfot over here describes a problem, which is, I would define it as religious hatred. Hatred that is justified or even sanctioned religiously. And he says any time there's such hatred that exists, it is want to get out of control. People don't know how to manage that type of hatred. I would say it even in a more broader sense, that it's ideological hatred. When people have a certain amount of ideological dissonance with others, where they dislike them because of their views, they dislike them because of what they represent, that hatred I would define as disproportionate hatred. It is not something that is about the issue. It becomes something that is so great for this individual that it blows out of proportion. And we see this many times. I think that if you take movements, progressive movements, moral movements, that many times when things don't go their way, all of a sudden the rhetoric that they use is beyond the pale. They justify their actions because things didn't go their way. And all of a sudden, the ends justify the means. And in doing so, there's a breakdown in everything they represented before, but more importantly, in the proper interaction between individuals. And so I'd say that the first aspect of Sinat Chinam that I wanted to focus on today is this idea of ideological, religious type of hatred, which exists. People have differences of opinion. People disagree to the point where they think somebody is doing something wrong, is doing something that's inappropriate. But how we manage that hatred, Balitos would say people can't manage it. It's impossible to manage that, and it spirals out of control, and it leads to this type of disproportionate hatred all the time. And that's why there's kfiat yetzer, even when it's justified. Even when there's a right, the Torah says it's a mitzvah. Nevertheless, there's a problem, and it's a problem that needs to be managed. I think that's the first thing that we always have to take to heart and to mind, is that when we have issues, differences with people, when we have ideological differences, religious differences with individuals, that remain at that level. And even when they're doing something wrong, the Torah says we can hate them. Hating them, hate the action that they take, not them. Hate the misconstruing of what the Torah represents. But again, it has to be managed in a way that it doesn't deteriorate into, as the Baal HaTosafot would say here, something that becomes a spiraling hatred where by the time we get to the end of it, nobody knows where it started. And many times, unfortunately, that happens with families, many times over the issues of money, but families also where issues come up and then the disagreements or the fights start on something small and then they become disproportionate because people lose or cannot manage the difficult task of disliking a particular action or disliking a particular view without making it into something that's much greater than that. So that's the first area of Sinat Chinam, maybe the first definition of Sinat Chinam, which I say is ideological hatred, but in many senses, the definition of Sinat Chinam here is disproportionate hatred. So the next area I want to speak to, give a little background to this, is a distinction that I heard from Rav Shimon Klein, and I want to build on it. It had nothing to do with what I'm speaking tonight, but just the distinction that he makes. That is, if you look in the beginning of Sefer Bereishit, with regards to creation, the Torah gives a story of creation in Perek Aleph and Perek Bet. It's already well known, famous, that in many ways the story in Perek Aleph and Perek Bet are not in agreement. There are differences between them. How you resolve those differences, how you deal with them, are the subject of much writing, including Rav Soloveitchik has written about it, Perek Aleph, Perek Bet. But what I want to just point out is a subtle difference between Perek Aleph and Perek Bet. In many senses, it's a leitmotif throughout the two prakim, and something that really defines the difference between Perek Aleph and Perek Bet. And that is, if you look in Perek Aleph in Bereishit, first of all, everybody knows that it's all God's creation. There, everything that's being done is done by God. But more importantly is the verb that is used over and over again in Perek Aleph. And that is, if you begin in the beginning, it says, Vayavdel Elukim ben Aor ben Achoshech, Vayim Avdil ben Mayim Lamayim. And then again, Vayavdel, Vayavdel, Vayavdel. The word Havdalah appears more than once, many, many times throughout Perek Aleph in Bereishit. And then, beyond Vayavdil, the word Limina, Liminehu, also appears, occurring over and over and over again. And if you look carefully in Perek Aleph is all about differentiation, distinction. It's all about taking things that are a greater piece and then dividing it down into its component parts. It starts with Tohu Vavohu, and then it's broken up into Oren Choshech. Then it's broken up into Mayim Elyonim, Mayim Tachtonim. Then the Mayim Tachtonim give way to Yavasha, and the Yavasha gives way to life, plant life. Then you have the Me'orot HaShamayim, Lavdil ben Or ben Achoshech, ben Ayom ben Alayla. Everything is about breaking things down into component parts. It's all about Havdalah. It's all about defining things. It's getting to the component parts. It's giving everything the ability to have its own definition, to have its own chance to shine, and to be its own object. And that's a whole Perek Aleph. You can go through it from beginning to end. It's all about breakdown, breaking into component parts, differentiation, distinction. If you go to Perek Bet, on the other hand, the movement is in the opposite direction. Perek Bet does exact opposite of what Perek Aleph does. Perek Bet is all about the combining of disparate objects, is the bringing together of objects to create and to formulate and to have things that are greater. The best pasuk to indicate that is, V'chol siach sadeh terem yeh baretz, v'chol esav hasadeh terem yitzmach, ki lo himtir Hashem Elokim al haaretz v'adam, over here you have all the different parts of what was mentioned in Bereishit Aleph coming together. The Adam, the Mayim, the Geshem from the Shamayim, the Aretz, the plant life that's going to grow. They all require a certain amount of collaboration in order for it to work. And all of Perek Bet is, instead of about being about Havdalah, is about collaboration, about a creation through the joining of things, rather than the separating of items. And the verbs that are used to command man what to do in each of those prakim even highlight that. The verb that is man is instructed with regards to Perek Aleph is v'kivshua. Kivshua means to conquer. The conquest, the definition of the individual is so paramount that it overrides the definition of any other thing. Kivshua, you cut the conquest. Yet in Perek Bet, the command to man is lo'ovda, that he has to maintain the equilibrium. He has to make sure that it's not just about man, that there are other ideals, there are other life that's here, and man has to balance between them. Those two disparate commands really highlight that difference. The difference of the Perek Aleph, where it's all about breaking, defining, coming into component parts, and Perek Bet, which is all about building, constructive collaboration. And that's the difference, really, a highlighted difference between Aleph and Bet. There's much, much more to say about this. But I want to use this just as a platform to explain something, which is that Chazal famously say with regards to Perek Aleph and Perek Bet, that Hashem alta b'machshavato, to create, based on Perek Aleph, Midat HaDin, but he saw it wasn't going to last. And therefore, he put together Midat HaDin, Midat HaRachamim, and created what was found, or what we find in Perek Bet. The difference between Perek Aleph and Perek Bet is Perek Aleph is a world in its immature state. It's a world which, in many cases, if you take any object that's out there, it has many component parts to it. Anything that you have a computer, a piece of paper, you have a watch, you have a jacket, anything that you have is made up of smaller and smaller parts. But that's not how we look at the item. We look at the item in its mature state is when those disparate items are brought together and they form something that has utility. They form something that brings that collaboration together. It's true in human development as well. When it comes to human development, a young child at first is very dependent and then slowly tries to define themselves independent of their parents. They break away from their parents and they reach the peak of that breakaway in that, call it, anybody who has teenagers or past the teenager stage knows that passing ailment called teenagehood, where everything they define themselves by is what they're not or what their parents don't do or anything that they find they don't like, and they're defining themselves by pushing away everything that's around them. That is, again, the teenager before the frontal lobe develops fully, before they have the capacity to understand that there's more to life than focusing and building the individual and defining the individual, but rather the collaboration that can come from working together with others rather than against them. And so there are different ways to define someone. And I think it's true of people as a whole. Unfortunately, even though we pass that immature state, many times that immaturity stays with us. And how do we define ourselves? Do we define ourselves by what we're not? Do we define ourselves by who we are not? Do we define ourselves by why we don't think? Which is all a negative formulation, which is really Perek Aleph in Bereishit. It's that immature state, the state that God said had no lasting power, which is that I define myself by I'm not like that person. I don't act like that. I don't do that. I don't believe in that. I don't, or all those definitions that focus on a formulation. It's very much the way of the political world today. Politics has really become defined by not what I am representing, but rather what I don't represent. Not about what I stand for, but rather about what the other person mistakenly stands for. And you define yourself. There are even political parties. They're built on that whole idea that they're defined by what they don't want or they can't be. And then when they're given the opportunity, they have nothing to do because they don't stand for anything. They only stand for what everybody else is not. They have nothing to define. There's another way to define oneself. A person can be defined by what they do, what they accomplish, but more importantly, how they collaborate with others and how they work together constructively with others. In the world that we live in, this is something that's difficult to come by because we focus so much on the individual utility. But we have to really focus on being constructive and building rather than trying to differentiate and to separate and to define ourselves separately. We have to take the time, and again here, I'm trying to give another definition to Sinat Finam, which is, it's not baseless hatred, it's hatred, it is a way of defining ourselves by what we dislike, by what we hate, or what I don't want, and I'm defining myself in that way. That type of formulation is an immature way to deal with the world around us, it's an immature way to define ourselves. It's what the Chazal tell us, Allah b'machshava, God thought to do that. And anyway, just as an aside, it's the only creator in Perek Aleph is God. That's the purview of God is the area of separation of Havdalah. The purview of man, where man's given the charge, and the place where he is creative is in Perek Bet. And in that area, man only has one job, and that's to unify and to collaborate. That means man has to act to bring together disparate ideas, to work towards inclusiveness rather than exclusiveness. Towards a world in which I define myself by what I am, but then I have a way to include others who disagree, who are different than I. And that way, it's a definition of something that is constructive rather than destructive. Something where you're building rather than separating. Somewhere where you define yourself not by others, but by what you do, but then how you include others rather than how you exclude others. That's the second area of Sinat Chinam that I wanted to touch on. The last area is a pasuk that's found in this week's Parsha, Shabbat Nachamu. I wanted to speak to that. There's a number of times the Torah mentions terminology, a person or a defined term called yashar. Someone who is straight, someone who is moral, someone who is upright. So much so that in Parshat Balak, when Bilam defines what he wants to be or how he wants to die, he says, Mimana far Yaakov umispar et rova Yisrael, tamot nafshi mot yisharim, utehi achriti kamohu. And the Chazal say, what does it mean, tamot nafshi mot yisharim? What does it mean that mot yisharim? So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us, mot yisharim is like Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who are the yisharim, and the Sefer Yisharim, which is Sefer Breishit. And so we see a very, very positive approach and view of this concept called yashar, or yisharim. On the other hand, we find in Sefer Dvarim, many times the terminology yashar is used in a negative way, or a negative formulation, and in Sefer Shoftim as well, we find a similar idea. In Dvarim, when it speaks about the difference between Yerushalayim and what happened in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, it says, Lo tasun, kol asher anachnu osim po yom, ish kol yashar be'inav. It's clear, ish kol yashar be'inav sounds positive. That's yashar. When people are yashar, that's positive. Yet the Torah here is dismissing that type of behavior of ish kol yashar be'inav. In Shoftim, Sefer Shoftim twice, the Sefer Shoftim says, Ve'yamim ha'im, ein melech b'Yisrael, ish hayashar be'inav yaseh. Again, ish hayashar be'inav yaseh. What's the problem with ish hayashar be'inav yaseh? Sounds pretty good. We just said that mot yisharim is that of the avot. The avot were yisharim. They're part of the Sefer Yisharim. Why isn't yashar something that we look at as positively? Sounds like someone who is just, someone who is moral, someone who acts in a yashar, in a straight manner. Isn't that something that we would look towards positively and even give accolades to someone who acted in that way? Why is there something wrong here, or why is the Torah giving some negative connotation to ish kol yashar be'inav yaseh? I want to suggest here that ish kol yashar be'inav, or yashrut, the key element here is ish kol yashar be'inav, that every individual can see have a certain moral clarity that they feel some certain way that they think is the right way. But the problem with ish kol yashar be'inav is, that's exactly what the problem is. It's be'inav. Ish kol yashar be'inav is what's good in my eyes. What's good and what I think is good. What they're missing is what the yashar in the other person's eyes. And the Torah in this week's Parsha, Parsha Etchanan, gives a prescription for that. It's one of the most important psukim in the Torah. It is the sister pasuk to Kedoshim Tehiyu, which is so famous from the Ramban's comments over there. But the Ramban makes similar comments over here. And this pasuk should be given a lot more attention and spoken about much more often. And that is the pasuk that's found in next week's Parsha, which is Vesita Vayashar Vehatov Be'enei Hashem. It's not enough to be a yashar. It has to be a yashar Vehatov. Which means, how do you differentiate between yashar and tov? The difference is, yashar is what's good in my eyes. Tov is what's good in someone else's eyes, when someone else also benefits from that. That's the bracha, the tov ha-meitiv. You only make that bracha when it affects others, when others are beneficiaries of that which you have done or you have received. And therefore, there's a tov ha-meitiv. Tov indicates beyond the scope of the individual. It means something that is bigger than what you like or what is good for you. The pasuk at the end of Megillat Esther says, say this to the leadership here, says Mordechai was retzui the rov echav. The majority of the people were pleased with him. The Ebenezer over there has a comment that he says that Chazal take it negatively, retzui rov echav, that there were those that didn't like Mordechai's entering into politics. The Ebenezer there says retzui the rov echav means that he was doing a good job. You can never be retzui l'kol echav. It's impossible as a leader to please everyone. But you at least have to please rov echav. You have to at least get the majority. You have to at least succeed at being somebody who brings together the majority of the people and pleases the majority of the people. That's retzui the rov echav. So to over here, when it comes to ish kol yashar be'inav yaseh, it's not enough to be right. It's not enough to be moral. It's not enough to be just. It has to be something vasita yashar v'tov, where we look beyond the individual. And again, here in Western culture, really the paramount importance of personal freedom, autonomy, individual liberty is so important that many times we defend it at the expense of social good or the moral good, because we give so much primacy to the individual. But in doing so, we also lose a certain amount of perspective about how it is that I can reach beyond myself. It's more important than just the utility that I get. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is very, very selfish. It is all about my own utility. It's not about how I affect those that are around me. And I think that when we speak to these three issues on Tisha B'Av, we find that these three issues are manifest in that which we see in Tisha B'Av. First of all, the religious ideological hatred that we spoke about. Gemara and Gittin and Daf Nun Vav speaks about the fact that the Bar Yomim were the cause of the destruction of Yerushalayim. Anybody who reads Josephus can see the problem is apparent. The religious fervor and the justification for people's behavior, their killing, the way that they act, is completely unacceptable, but it's justified by these ideals, by this hatred that is promoted by some religious belief that they are correct. The issue of the immature state of Havdalah versus bringing things together, the collaborative state, we know that the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Yushalayim habnuya ki'ir shechubra la yachdav. It's a city of unity. It's a city that brought people together. It's a city where differences are forgotten and people are able to be together despite disparities between them. And the loss of Yerushalayim is exactly that. It's that Havdalah. It's that definition by breaking down rather than bringing together. And V'asita Yashar V'atov is represented by the Easter of Shelat Shalom on Tisha B'Av. We're not allowed to greet people on Tisha B'Av. The reason we can't greet is because we have to be sensitive to the fact that we're missing something, that there's something missing in our interactions with people, and that we're able to connect or to speak to others, that it makes a difference and it changes something within us. And that's Easter of Shelat Shalom. So the challenge that I put to us all is that hopefully, Bezrat Hashem, that we don't have to celebrate another Tisha B'Av. That the Sinat Chinam that we define here, we should be able to turn into Avat Chinam. And that means that when we have differences, we're able to leave that at differences and not deteriorate, as the Baal HaTosfot would say, into a spiraling hatred that has disproportionate hatred in it and is unjustified in anyone's book. There is no justification for that type of behavior and that type of hatred. We have to define ourselves not by what we're not, but what we are. We have to define ourselves by how we are inclusive, how we bring others in, how we're constructive in our behavior, that not about breaking things down, but how we build things up. And the last, which I think is the most challenging, is the necessity to step out of ourselves. And that means the challenge for people who do, I'm sure this is a community full of chesed, community that is more than generous with their tzedakah. But the question that I pose to you, the challenge I pose to you is, how many people step out of their comfort zone? How many people step out of their circle of friends? Is their life defined by a very closed unit of individuals? And everything they do and everything that is about them is all about that circle or that closed group. Have you ever reached out? Do we reach out to touch other people's lives? To make other people's lives better and leave our comfort zone? So that it's not just V'asita Yashar or Ish Kolei Yashar Ve'enav Yaseh, but rather Yisita Yashar V'atov. Make a difference in someone else's life. Make a difference in including someone that's not in your circle, who's not in that smaller group or that smaller concentric circle that you have. You need to expand those concentric circles so that we're much more inclusive and that we make a bigger difference. V'asita Yashar V'atov. Bezrat Hashem, these ideas, these thoughts should lead us to a better year. You'll have points along the way. You can remember this week's parsha, Shabbat Nachmu, Asita Yashar V'atov. Simchat Torah is going to come around. You're going to ring Breishit Aleph, Breishit Bet. You can remember those ideas as well. And then we have the Chamor Sonacha in Sefer Dvarim, Parshat Mishpatim. We have points along the way to remind ourselves about this. And hopefully that will carry us through the year so that next year, B'meir B'Yameinu, we'll all be something together in unity in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yechani Ben Yerkash, Amar Rotsa, Kosh Baruch, Zach, Nisrael, Pekach, Herbalem, Torah, Mitzvot, Shemar, Adonai, Chafetz, Mansigoy, Yavdil, Terav, Yadir.